Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
He was just outgoing, and he was homeless at the time when I met him, and it just, he was so smart. Like, he would do the New York Times crossword puzzle in, like, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes. He just didn't fit in with, you know, normal 9-to-5 working type thing. So he traveled around a lot and made friends with people. I mean, we were really good friends, and I constantly think, oh, he's going to, for the first couple of years, he's going to call me. He's going to be trimming weed up in the mountains of California or something, or got a free ride to Mexico, you know, something just crazy. But a lot of that stuff has kind of gone out the window for me. The people that last saw him should be suspects, I guess, in my mind. Something bad happened, like something's wrong. And this was, I think when I had talked to them at that point, it had been 4 or 5 months, and I'm like, nobody's seen Matt. His parents are worried. Like, I was a little frantic at the time. I'm like, go there and spray luminol. I feel like something bad happened there, and that, you know, and they moved out shortly after that too. And I said to the cops, you don't think that's strange? And they said, well, their lease could have been up. I said, well, did you talk to the landlord? I said, I feel like I'm doing more work than you guys. And I wasn't rude.
In the fall of 2014, 44-year-old Matthew Hulse was struggling with an addiction to alcohol and homelessness. He was taking odd jobs, fixing up things he found in the trash, and living with two men. We only know by their first names. Matt didn't always keep in touch with his friends and family, but when months had gone by with no communication, they started to worry. Matt had disappeared, and since some time had gone by, it was very difficult to find the puzzle pieces to help them solve this mystery. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 205 of The Vanished, Matthew Hulse's story. Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be a challenge. I've always had problems whether it was with the fit or quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist, and you can find it at Skims. From cropped silhouettes to long-sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. You know that I've been wearing Skims for a long time, and recently tried one of their t-shirts. It's the best-fitting tee I've ever worn. Skims makes the best basics and foundations. I got the boyfriend t-shirt in Onyx, and it's so soft and comfortable. I want to wear it every day. It literally fits like a dream. Shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com, now available in sizes extra, extra small to 4X. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know I sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows. Matthew Hulse had been challenged by an alcohol addiction for much of his life. He had been to rehab, but with limited success. At the time of his disappearance, he was holding down temporary jobs and living with roommates. We were contacted by Matt's friend Eric about doing a story on Matt's disappearance, and he shared with us what he remembers of Matt prior to his disappearance.
So I met Matt in Columbia, Missouri in 2004. I think I was 17 or 16. And I was traveling around the country with a couple of friends and just saw him sitting on a bench, I think, or just sparked up a conversation, asked, you know, what there was to do in that town. And I've always had older friends my entire life. And Matt was, he didn't act his age. I mean, not in a bad way, but like, you know, when I met him, I don't think we probably didn't even talk about that kind of stuff. You know, just, hey, I think I asked him where the free campground was around there, and there's a free campground outside of town where we stayed for, I think it was a week. Me and him became closer friends, and the people we were traveling with became more distant friends because they were just, they're kind of naive, and me and Matt had known the streets and the ropes, and me and Matt became friends like immediately. Went out to the Rainbow Gathering in California. Like I said, the people I was traveling with were just kind of regular friends, and me and Matt just became like best friends like right away. We had plans to maybe ditch them and go on our way without them. They were not real street smart, and me and Matt had kind of some street smarts. So we went, I think, I can't remember the town it was. It was Northern California. And we went there, and I'm a chef. My dad's a chef, and we stayed at this camp. I think it was called Love and Ovens, and you got free food if you helped cook. So we gravitated to that right away, and I was cooking a lot. And I think we were there for 10 days. And after that, we kind of, everyone was out of money and decided we were going to go back to Madison. So we kind of went straight back from the Rainbow Gathering to Madison. I think it took us 4 or 5 days to get back here. And then he met my parents and kind of became a family friend right away, too. Madison, Wisconsin's my hometown. And came back here, and then he lived here on and off for about 10 years. He was always upbeat, happy.
Matt was from Columbia, Missouri, while his friend Eric is from Madison, Wisconsin. Matt lived a transient lifestyle, but had been staying in the Columbia area working. When we spoke with Eric, he told us what Matt's habits were like.
I'm not sure what year it started or whatever, but he'd always just wanted to do his own thing. You know, he'd worked jobs on and off his whole life, but he had a problem with alcohol, and that affected getting to work on time and doing a decent job, you know. So he had it together, I think, for a lot of years, maybe a couple years before I met him. He might have had a place and a job and stuff, but when I met him, he was homeless. I don't know. He just couldn't hold down employment. Like odd jobs, or he liked restaurants, washing dishes, doing prep work. I got him multiple jobs over the years, and really stuck my neck out a lot of places for him. And he'd go a couple months, he'd do a good job, he'd be happy for himself, he would tell his parents, he'd be doing good, and then I'd find him, you know, on the street, or he'd call me and, oh, I don't want to talk about it, you know, screw that place, you know, or something like that, but we tried.
Matt has two sisters, Sue and Jane. You'll hear Eric discuss Matt living with a sister, and that was Jane and her boyfriend. We spoke to his other sister, Sue, for this story, and we asked her to describe Matt.
My brother and I were very close. He was 10 years younger than me, so I pretty much spent every day after school babysitting him. He was very adventurous. Even as a young child, he would take off out of the yard, and we would find him blocks from home. Sometimes people would call and say, Matt's down here, and we'd go after him. So he was kind of always, you know, if you turned your head for a minute, he was gone. That's just his character from the time he was 2 or 3 years old. He was pretty young when he would take off like that. But, you know, I babysat him all the time and, you know, dressed us in matching hippie costumes for Halloween when he was 3 or 4 and I was 13 or 14. And then by the time he was 8 and I was 18, I had left home and moved away from Columbia and moved to Kansas, where I'm at now, in Lawrence. And when I would go back to visit, you know, he'd still play his trombone in my face, et cetera. But, you know, we were still close, but he always considered me the good sister. You know, I kind of kept a little more on track than my older sister, and I just always took care of him. So that was kind of our little bond thing there. He came to stay with me several times here in Lawrence.
Even though Sue is several years older than Matt, she remembers an incident that may have shaped Matt's life forever.
one of his bigger issues happened when he was, I think he was actually, he was still in Scouts, probably 10. I wasn't living at home anymore. I was gone. He made a homemade smoke bomb and it blew up and on the stove, and he got really bad burns on his hand. And while he was in the hospital for the pain, they had to treat him with morphine. And in all honesty, it didn't seem like after that he was ever quite the same. But I know my dad like called everybody in Scouts after that, right after that incident happened, because he was pretty sure all the boys had that little recipe thing. And so he notified all the parents to let them know so that none of the other kids would try it. But that was pretty hard on him. I know when my mom and dad moved to the kind of outskirts of Lawrence, out to a little log home they built, and just being out, you know, because they moved to a different school, onto a littler town area outside of Columbia. And he, you know, he kind of, I don't know, mom and dad kind of thought that it might have isolated him too much and he didn't have as many of, you know, friends, and that was kind of hard on him. He just had an awkwardness socially somewhat, but he had a great sense of humor. He was so funny. I mean, he could have been a stand-up comic. He could keep you rolling. He did have a good, very, very, very good sense of humor.
Sue described how her relationship with Matt became estranged despite her continued help and hope that he would get sober and succeed.
15 or maybe years ago, he came and got a job at KU as a, you know, custodian, and he had his own apartment downtown, and, you know, he stayed with me for a little while, and then he rented a room from a friend of mine, and then he finally got his own little apartment, and then kind of fell off the wagon and just disappeared. And I think he went up to Madison with Eric. And then after that, he came back maybe once or twice after that. But, you know, we just weren't quite as close after the last disappearance kind of thing when he took off. Very loving as a kid, but had, you know, he did scouting with my father. So he had some friends there. I think, you know, my mom and dad kind of blame themselves for some of his issues. But I know that he had tried medications before, didn't like the side effects and such. I never saw him drink until he was, like, older. You know, like, I think my sister started drinking when she was, like, 13 or something. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think Matt was like that at all. I don't feel like he got into that stuff until he was out of high school and into college, because he actually did start college and just never finished. Did a lot of cooking. You know, he cooked at different restaurants. I had, like, there's other times when he was younger in his 20s that he came and stayed with me for a while, or I'd find him an apartment to rent or something. And he worked a lot of restaurants as a cook. I mean, he enjoyed that. But when he was working here at KU, he also was a pretty good photographer, but he never did that for a living. But he was also a good musician and never did that for a living. And then when he was here, he worked at the university, worked as a custodian.
While living with his sister and her boyfriend, Matt was asked to leave by the boyfriend. So he called Eric and asked for a bus ticket to get to Wisconsin. Here's Eric.
So he would sometimes go back to Columbia, Missouri, not very often. I think it was 2014. He had been working at a job that I had recently left on and off and staying with a friend. And we weren't the closest at that time. I don't remember. I think I had a girlfriend at the time that really didn't care for Matt. And he called me up one night and said, "My mom is sick. Can you help me with some bus money to get down to Columbia to see my mom?" And I said, "Matt, you never paid me back from the last time. You know, I haven't heard from you in a couple of weeks. You know, I can't help you." So I think this girl that he was staying with or hanging out with at the time gave him some money. I just recently found out a couple of days ago that he got to Chicago and didn't have any more money. And he called his sister, Jane, and asked if she could send him some money or get the ticket so he could get down there to see his mom. At the time, I think he was under the the idea, I think, that she was really sick and going to die. So he kind of just like jumped, abandoned ship and left. 9/16/14 was the last time I talked to him. And he said he wasn't getting along with his sister and wanted to come back up here and wanted a bus ticket.
Eric wasn't expecting this to be the last time that he spoke to his friend, but he described the conversation this way.
And I said, yeah, I'll get you back up here, because I know that he didn't do good in that town after he left with me originally. He said he didn't really want to go back there. So I knew he wanted out. So I told him I'd give him a bus ticket, and I said, I'm at work, and it was a really busy day for me at work, and I said, I'll call you back. And it wasn't uncommon to not hear from him for a couple days or something, but it was like a week, 2 weeks, a month, 2 months. Then I started getting worried. I started calling. I think that same night I called the phone that he had. It was a prepaid phone. I called that phone back a couple times, no answer. Then I think about after 2 weeks, it was a prepaid phone. And eventually it just said it was disconnected. That wasn't uncommon for Matt, too. I think he probably had 20 phones the whole time that I knew him. He'd just lose them. They'd get stolen. He'd run out of minutes. He'd ruin one. After a month, that's when I just had a bad feeling.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this, and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. After no one had heard from Matt for a month or so, they started to get worried that this wasn't his usual habit of falling off the radar for a week or two. We asked Eric who filed the missing persons report and how it came about.
So he was staying with his sister in Columbia, Missouri, and his sister's boyfriend didn't like Matt's sister bringing him there and having, you know, a homeless guy. I don't think they got along. So he basically kicked Matt out, and I think that was right around when Matt was calling me. I didn't talk to Matt too many times when he was down there. I, at the time, had a kind of newer job, newer girlfriend. Didn't think much of, you know, Matt had gone down there a couple times and come back, and everything was fine. So when his sister's boyfriend kicked him out, I'm pretty sure he was couch surfing. He was homeless, just floating around that town, waiting to get back here. There's multiple people. Even in that thing online, it says Matt was heading back to Wisconsin. I don't think he ever left that town. He was staying with I think, two guys named Pete and Jason, and I'd heard their names from him multiple times over the years, you know, just stories about them, or never said anything about them being violent or crazy or anything like that. Just normal stories you talk about with your friends, about other friends that, you know, that you've never met or whatever. So he's staying with them, and there's like one detail here that I'm not 100% sure on. I was in contact with his sister, and she was also worried. And I think that she may have done a wellness check and had the police go to these guys' house that he was staying with, Pete and Jason. I think it says he was missing since 9/16/14. That's the last time that I talked to him. So that date is wrong on the thing if you find it online. The date that I filed it was 12/18/14, and that was directly from the police. I talked to the detective boss the other day just to try to get some of these dates, because I never wrote any of this down because I didn't think that my friend was going to disappear for good.
Matt's sister Sue told us what she thought when she heard her brother was missing.
I don't know. At first, I almost thought maybe he had committed suicide. But then with that, I figured, you know, something would surface sooner. From the last time I talked to the detective, and he acted like he wanted to get a cadaver dog to go out to that guy's house, I really felt like they thought that, I don't know, I don't even know these people. So I think it was a Jason, or did they call him Frosty or something like that? I don't know for sure. But last time I talked to Detective Voss, it sounded like they were trying to follow up with that, like trying to get permission to go onto that property with a cadaver dog to see if it would show anything. And I did not hear back from Detective Voss after that. I mean, I guess I kind of think it's possible, just because of, you know, being homeless and on the streets and in the cold and the alcohol. He's kind of doing that to himself anyhow. You know, he was kind of actively harming himself. The Missourian, and I posted pictures there in the paper and such, but I didn't really get much response from that. I have a friend that works for the Missourian. She helped me with that. Kind of put up a few posters, missing person posters around town here. Didn't really hear anything. Yeah, I just had like one girl that randomly, I mean like anonymously, left a message saying that she had heard he was here in Lawrence, but you know, most of the homeless people around here are downtown, and I have posters up down there, and I never heard anything. So I don't think he's here. Anytime I see any homeless person on a bench or anything, I stop the car and get out and go look at him and make sure it's not him, because I haven't given up hope. You know, because as long as he wasn't drinking, and when he was here and, you know, had his own apartment downtown and such, you know, he was holding his job. He was doing fine, appearance-wise. I mean, outwardly, appearance-wise.
After filing the police report, Eric tried to get in touch with the Columbia, Missouri Police Department on multiple occasions, but his attempts fell on deaf ears. As you've heard me mention in so many episodes before, the police weren't too interested in finding a homeless person with an addiction problem. We did attempt to speak with the Columbia Police Department, but they declined. In response to our record request, they sent his initial missing persons report that simply states that he was last seen in downtown Columbia, possibly headed to Wisconsin.
I talked to the police multiple times. Because Matt was homeless on and off, it was really hard. The same with his parents. They didn't really, you know, sometimes Matt disappeared for, I think his dad's exact words were, one time Matt disappeared for 3 months and we were worried about him, and then he just showed back up. And I said, well, yeah, I know, but I'd known Matt for, at that time it had been 10 years. And I said, I've never gone longer than a week or two without hearing from Matt or knowing somewhere where he was at. So it was kind of weird that the cops it's not weird because he's homeless or whatever, but they didn't really want to do it at first. I think I had to call more than once. A friend of mine brought up the fact the other night when we were writing this timeline down that it was strange that I was the one that did it and his parents didn't. And then my friend had said something like, sometimes they don't even let people do it if they're not family members, but I'm not sure about how that works.
After he was reported missing, some of Matt's belongings were found in the home he shared with two roommates, Pete and Jason. When we talked to Eric, he told us what he found most startling about this discovery.
Either the police or his sister or the sister's boyfriend found a lot of Matt's possessions there, like out on the front porch or something. It was his bicycle, which is a lot of people say is weird because that's how Matt got around. Matt would find a junk bike and fix it up and, you know, work on it a lot. He would do it at my house too. He'd get a crappy bike from somebody and fix it up. And that's how he got around, because he didn't have money for a car. I don't think he even had a driver's license. I don't know if it had been taken or I'm not sure. So at the house where he was staying, either his sister or the police found his possessions, his backpack, his ID, his cell phone, his food stamp card, and his bike were there, but he wasn't there. And they said that they didn't know where he went. So that immediately made me super suspicious. And that immediately just set off a red flag to me. Like, I mean, I would leave his stuff here, but he knew it was safe. But it just seemed weird. Like, where did he go without his bike? Where did he walk to?
Alarmed by this find, Eric hoped the police would search the house and interview the two roommates.
They probably were just like, Matt left town and his buddy's worried about him. They're not going to go out. I think it took multiple people calling in his parents, his sister, before they actually started, you know, and I think at that point, that would have been after the 1231. I know I just said, can you go to that house? Can you find out who lives there now? Can you spray that stuff? Like, I've always had this theory that me and Matt had fought as friends, you know, before. Like, he'd get drunk and I just like, go to bed, man, you know, and some people, when they drink, they just can't stop. And there'd be times where we'd get physical, but we're friends and, you know, I never hurt him or he never hurt me bad or anything, you know, but I feel like maybe they were just like, maybe somebody just, you know, one punch and hurt him real bad or something and they panicked. And that's really what I think happened. His sister, Sue, she said that Pete's parents have a farm. She told Detective Voss that she wanted, and I don't know how legally it works. She said she wanted the cops to question them again, ask them about his parents' farm or something. Maybe they took him out there, or maybe they, I mean, it's horrible, but I, you know, threw him in a garbage can out on the street or something. Because, you know, I think like in their minds, if they did do something wrong, they're probably like, nobody's going to miss me. It's going to take a long time before somebody notices that Matt's missing because he's kind of a loner.
Eric tried tracking down the roommates named Peter and Jason, but without last names, he was unable to find any valuable information. Still, he has continued to help Matt's family in the years since he disappeared.
And I talked to Matt's dad a lot. I never talked to his mom. His dad has passed away. I think his last year passed away. But I was in contact with him a lot, and he said that the cops said that Pete and Jason were not somebody you'd want to hang out with or go fishing with, and that the cops told his dad that they're kind of nasty people. That's what the cops told his dad. So that they had been in trouble and were not good people. I think Sue may have put flyers up, and I think maybe a billboard or something. Something or a hotline to call in if you'd seen them, and they got a couple of calls, nothing major. One of them said that they had saw him in Kansas City.
While speaking with Eric, he told us that Matt had lived all over the nation, but that he had always relied on food stamps and similar assistance, and he thought this might be a way that they could track down Matt.
And I brought this up to the cops too. I think they told me he had been on food stamps for 20 years. All over the country. He lived with me in Duluth, Minnesota. He lived in Maine for 8-9 months when I was living with a girl and she didn't want Matt to stay there because he wasn't pulling his weight. So he went to Maine. He had a food stamp card there, Fayette, Missouri, Kansas City. The guy named off, you know, all these different places. And the food stamp card went cold and they said he hasn't applied for assistance or anything since in between September of 2014 and
I think October, I think they got a home social services and the card had been used one last time. And I was like, well, go there and see if it's him. I'm like, can you go to the convenience store or grocery store and ask if they have it on the camera? And they're like, well, they usually don't. And I'm like, well, can you go? And I was like, if somebody else is using it, maybe they know something. Maybe they did something to Matt and took his card. I mean, I don't know. But there's no activity or anything of him trying to apply for assistance. And I think he had been getting food stamps for 20 years or something.
Even with no evidence that Matt has used food stamps in the 5 years since he vanished, Eric still wonders if he could be alive. During Eric's search for Matt, he found a person who says they had seen Matt months after Eric had last spoken with him.
A mutual friend of ours who's been on the streets, on the road his entire life. His name is Matt Johnson. I've known him probably since 2004 or 5. No, it'd be before I met Matt. So it was like 2002, probably. He said that he saw Matt on New Year's Eve. They were drinking together, hanging out at the cemetery. That was one of Matt's weird places he'd like to hang out, probably because maybe you can drink there and cops maybe don't bother you there. But they were drinking there on New Year's Eve, and they ran out of booze. And Matt Johnson said that he had saw him, and that they ran out of booze, and Matt was going back to Jason's house to get a backpack that he had left there that had a bottle of booze in it. I think the stores were all closed, and he said, I'm going there and I'm going to come back and, you know, we'll have some more drinks or whatever. Matt Johnson said he never came back. He said that they were even talking that night of coming back to Madison, and he had mentioned my name, and he said he was coming back to live with you or stay with you. And I said, well, that was the plan, but that was multiple months earlier. And then he said he went to Jason's house and he never came back. I've had the thought, like, he would, like, when he couldn't stay with me in Madison, he had a camp that he had out in this nature conservancy area here. I never went there, but he told me all about it. He got pallets from this one place and he put leaves and stuff, and he would stay out there in the winter. And I said, you're crazy. But, you know, he couldn't stay with me every single day. Like, we got sick of each other. And I'd be like, Matt, you got to go for a while, you know, and he'd stay out there. And I wonder if he maybe had some kind of similar thing in Missouri, maybe a camp or something where he was staying. And he would drink. He drank a lot, and he was an alcoholic. The thought has crossed my mind, maybe he's went to his camp or something and had a heart attack. I mean, back then he would have been, you know, 45 or something, and he didn't take real good care of himself, but.
Eric continues to hold out hope that his friend is out there somewhere alive. As if the sketchy roommates in this case weren't enough to make Eric wonder what happened to Matt, there was also a Facebook post that mystified Matt's friends even more.
So that brings me like to my last thing here, which is kind of disturbing. So last year in February, Matt Johnson posted something on Facebook. He said, I'm in Columbia, Missouri, where are all my friends at? And I posted on there, go find Matt. Go find Matt. Go look for Matt for me. And this girl, Sheena, who's from Columbia, Missouri, posted on this thread, everybody knows Matt's dead around here. So my first response, and this is still on Facebook, and she deleted a couple of comments because she made some incriminating statements on there and then deleted them. So my immediate response was, why in the hell would you say that? I don't know this person. And she said, everybody around here knows the story. That comment is still on Facebook. And then we went into detail and she said, you know, the last people that were hanging out with Matt were crazy, violent, horrible people. And a couple of statements after that, she told me it was Jason. Or she said Frosty, and I found out later that's Jason's street or nickname. So, you know, she basically said that something bad had happened with him and Jason. I think she's involved or knows what happened because she started backpedaling. I think she knew after me kind of digging into it and starting to ask more questions, I think she started to backpedal, and then she changed her story and said that they were all hanging out at the bar and Matt was talking about going to his friend's house in Wisconsin, and this strange, creepy guy showed up and started buying Matt drinks, and that Matt left with him saying he's going to Wisconsin, and that was the last time she ever saw Matt. So she totally contradicted herself. It just was very strange. We went to instant messenger, personal message back and forth, and she told me that she was dating Jason at the time.
Frustrated and alarmed, Eric turned to the police once more for help in finding out what happened to Matt.
The cops said that they couldn't find her. So, I mean, that kind of made me upset. You know, I'm just like, this person has information, and I kind of hit a dead end because she just kind of shut off from me and wasn't telling me. She started this story about this guy, this creepy guy that was buying Matt drinks, and they left for Wisconsin. And that just, it came out of nowhere too. It's just when I started prying harder, this story just came up out of nowhere. February 14th, she was living in, still in Columbia. So, I mean, I don't know if she's moved. And I messaged her the other day and said, just because I couldn't remember her last name, I was trying to get some info. And I just said, have you heard anything? And she goes, no, I think about Matt all the time. And I want to know just as much as you. And I'm thinking, yeah, right. I don't know.
Between Matt Johnson saying that he hung out with Matt months after Eric had last spoken to him, and the stories that Sheena has told on Facebook, Eric is left wondering what the truth is and what happened to his friend.
But I wonder sometimes if he drank too much that night or had a heart attack and he's somewhere, you know. He wanted to be hidden so the cops wouldn't bother him or nobody else would bother him. So the camp that he had in Madison, he was like, nobody could find this place if they even tried. And I said, I thought about coming to see you one night. He's like, you couldn't find me if you tried. He's like, I got camel tarps and this and that. So that thought's crossed my mind too, that maybe he went to his camp and something happened or froze. He was sleeping up here in the winter when it was sometimes 10 below zero. He would go to resale shops and he'd say, I got 10 sleeping bags. You know, I'm fine. I'm warm. Sometimes it's too hot in there. But that thought's crossed my mind. So the Matt Johnson thing kind of contradicts that maybe something happened at Jason's house because that was in September. I mean, I trust Matt Johnson's word that he said he saw him. I said, you sure it wasn't the year before? And he goes, this guy, Matt Johnson, was like, I was in Mexico that year. And then he was like, I know exactly. And I said, are you sure? He said, yeah, I was with Matt. You know, Maddie. And I'm like, yeah. He goes, yeah, we were drinking in the graveyard. And he went to go get some booze and never came back. And he's like, he was hopping the train that day and the next day, and he was like, I looked all over for him. I asked around for him, and he's like, I couldn't miss my train, and I just had to get out of there. And he was like, I didn't think anything of it. I thought, I'll see you next time I come through this town.
So what happened to Matthew Hulse? Did he hit the streets of a new city and start a new life? Is he out there somewhere living amongst the homeless? If so, why hasn't he contacted Eric or his family? And what about the two roommates that the police described as sketchy? Was there a physical altercation and Matt ended up dead? Did Matt Johnson really see Matt months after Eric had last spoken with him? And what about those stories that Sheena has posted on Facebook? Did something happen to Matt in Columbia where he was last seen? He had apparently told several people about his plans to go back to Wisconsin. Could he have left the area and something happened to Matt along the way? Or could he have passed away in the woods in a campsite like the one he had told Eric about in Wisconsin? With so many possible avenues and few clues, it's difficult to even know where to start looking. At the time of his disappearance, Matthew Scott Hulse was 44 years old. He was last seen in the fall of 2014. He stands at 6 feet tall and weighs approximately 160 pounds. He has brown hair and hazel eyes. He has several tattoos on each shoulder. If you have any information about the disappearance of Matthew Hulse, please call the Columbia Police Department at 573-874-7652.
I appreciate someone, you know, showing some interest, and I'd hope that it'll get more people involved, and if somebody knows something. Unless he, you know, went to his camp and died and or had a medical emergency or something, even when I told the guy the other night, even if Matt was in with witness protection, he would get drunk and he would call me. You know, that's the way he is, you know. He would just... I've had the same phone number, I think, since 12 years or something. I've had the same address for the last 7 years. Like, you know, crazy theories. People are like, maybe he's in Mexican jail, or, you know, maybe he's, you know, maybe he got in trouble. And I'm like, I don't think he had a passport.
That brings us to the end of episode 205. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to contact me, there's a page and a discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by filling out a short survey at Wondery.com/survey. Join me next time. I'll be covering a case from Chicago. Thanks for listening.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
When you're committed to raising the standard, you're bound to ruffle some feathers. At Happy Egg, we like to say we farm differently. But in reality, we produce eggs the way people used to, by partnering with local small family farmers who raise our happy hens on 8 or more acres. Because in our opinion, farming shouldn't be complicated. It should be happy. Choose happy with Happy Egg. Visit happyegg.com and look for the yellow carton at a store near you.
Happy
Egg.